The campaigning, the talking, the polling about the 2022 midterms just about over, with this Tuesday being Election Day, or maybe more accurately, the conclusion of the voting period. How strong will the winners win? How well will losers accept reality? Will the voice of the voter be as loud as it's been anticipated to be? With us now to discuss this and more is practitioner in residence for legal studies and political science at the University of New Haven, Trish Krause. How are you today, Trish?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Thank you for being here to talk about what is a unique experience in the world as we look at a republic and a democracy. By the way, website for University of New Haven is newhaven.edu. Learn more about the educational opportunities University of New Haven offers at their website. And I think, too, Trish, when you look at the midterms on and the national scale versus a state like New Jersey where gerrymandering has made any change really next to impossible. So many races being up in the air so close to Election Day, it's a fun mystery if you're a political junkie.
Yeah, and, you know, it's been really, really difficult, you know, as political scientists to kind of make any predictions with any certainty with this go-around. The polls, you know, I've been following the polls, and they kind of shift on a daily basis. So, you know, I think we do have a unique situation where it really is. I do think that the House is going to flip back to the Republican Party. I'm just not sure what that, you know, how much, how many seats they're going to pick up and what the difference is going to be. But the Senate now is just totally up in the air, and it's really hard to tell where things are going to end up.
Looking at the House, too, of course, Kevin McCarthy is assuming he'll be re-anointed speaker,
right,
and regain the speakership. I don't know if anyone's really looked at this, though, because to what degree is he going to have to either tolerate or even bow to MAGA members on the GOP side and some of what will probably be, well, let's just call them outrageous demands that they'll make of him.
Right. And, you know, he's got to become the speaker first. And I'm not sure that's guaranteed. Because you do have those voices that are very loud on the MAGA side. And, you know, he may get there, and then he is going to have the challenge of how does he unite all those voices. And I'm not sure that's possible. You know, if you look at when Trump first came in as president, you know, he had the House, he had the Senate, he had the presidency, and they still couldn't really get anything accomplished because you had members of the Freedom Caucus who were, you know, rejecting some of their proposals. So I'm not sure that how that's going to work out, honestly. And I don't know if, even if they get the House, say they lose the Senate, you have a Democratic president, you know, what can he really get accomplished anyway as the leader of the House? Because things are going to get shot down either in the Senate or they're going to get vetoed by Biden. So I'm not sure he really has anything going for him in the beginning anyway because of the situation that Congress is in right now.
Yeah, even if it's a 20-seat gain by the GOP, that might not be enough because those 20 occupants, that 20-seat advantage, might not all fall in line with what the Republicans
right.
want to do.
Right, correct. And that's, you know, it's not just about being Speaker. And, you know, he seems to think, or at least he's presenting this front that, you know, he's going to magically get all of these things done. But if you look, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene yesterday said at a rally that, you know, if the Republicans retake the House, that no more money is going to the Ukraine. So, you know, how do you sort of come back from that when you have a group of people who are willing to make these statements and then you somehow have to present this united front? And I just don't know how he's going to do that.
And, of course, impeaching Biden is on their list of things to do as well, should he regain
right.
the House. But then they're sort of oblivious to the fact that every target of Republican impeachment wound up gaining in the polls, and their party gained in that next election.
Right. Yeah, and that's a winning proposition for either party. It's that group that you've been talking about, sort of the MAGA group that's pushing that, Marjorie Taylor Greene, I believe has introduced more than one bill to do that. But, you know, it's not what the American people want. They don't want to see a president impeached. So the whole idea that this is something you're running on and promising in an election, you know, a couple of them have said, you know, well, we're going to impeach both Biden and Kamala Harris. And it's just like, okay, that leaves you with Nancy Pelosi if, you know, you don't understand the process for the line of succession. I just don't think they're thinking things through. They're making statements trying to win re-election.
Dr. Trish Krause, practitioner in residence for legal studies and political science at the University of New Haven. Newhaven.edu is their website. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. When you look at some of the candidates in Georgia, for example, Herschel Walker, Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania, which Oprah got involved with that race this past Thursday,
right,
endorsing Oz's opponent, Fetterman. You mentioned the polls, too. I noticed, too, were the more recent polls after that happened, that 1-2 point lead for Fetterman has now expanded to 4 and 5 points. So maybe there's the Oprah factor in there in play. Mm-hmm. But with these cult-of-personality candidates, very few, I believe, of the people saying they're voting for Walker, they're voting for Oz, they're not voting for those people. They're voting GOP. They want to see the GOP, whatever the consequences, whatever the inactivity. They just want the GOP to regain the Senate.
Right. And you've seen that in the support that they've received from, you know, the established Republicans. You know, Mitch McConnell's been sort of very quiet about these races, but when all is said and done, his whole goal is to regain control of the Senate, as you just said. So, yeah, they're going to support these candidates. You know, Herschel Walker, from my perspective, just doesn't belong in government. You know, he obviously doesn't understand anything about how government works. And, you know, I'm all in favor of having outsiders come in to government, you know, shake things up, that kind of thing. But you got to understand the process, and you have to understand, you know, what it means to actually be in Congress. And I don't really think he gets that. So I think electing people for the sake of protecting seats is definitely not the approach we should be taking. But this is where we are, you know, and this is where we've been probably for the last maybe 8-10 years in terms of elections. It hasn't become about passing legislation. It's not about policy. It's not about what the American people want. It's about power and control, and that does not really make for good politics.
Of course, you can always say that there are examples of personality people to a certain degree succeeding. Obviously, Ronald Reagan might be the first name that comes to mind. Jesse Ventura,
right,
he seemed to be rather effective as a governor in straightening out a state that was having, financial problems, I guess you'd say, or teetering financially. But that's probably those are exceptions to the general rule. You mentioned polls, and certainly that's what we look to as reference points. But I noticed a couple of candidates, the poker term is they've been displaying their tails. Kerry Lake, for example, in Arizona, Ron Johnson in Wisconsin, they're saying they won't accept the results of the election.
Right.
So I'm thinking, okay, something inside your campaign mechanics is telling you, you might not be winning this. So you're throwing out that lifesaver for yourself even before Election Day.
Right. And, you know, I understand the need for polls. I have very little faith in the polls. They've been so very wrong in the past few elections. But the problem with these types of candidates is, you know, I've been reading about people that are already lining up their court cases. You know, we haven't even voted yet.
Yeah.
And these people are already planning on taking a case to court. And, you know, I'm not sure how that makes people feel about our system when somebody is already questioning the outcome of an election that hasn't even happened yet. And I do think you're going to see that. You know, the Arizona governor's race is so, so close, and it's been, you know, going sort of back and forth in terms of the polls that I've looked at, you know, where she's up or her opponent's been up at various points in time. You know, I don't know. I don't know if you can trust the polls, and I think that these candidates, if they sort of sow the seeds of doubt beforehand, then these people that voted for them, you know, will be pushing for this after the election because they'll feel like, you know, the candidate was like, see, I told you this was going to be, you know, a rigged election to begin with. Connecticut, we don't really have those types of issues. You don't hear a lot about, rigged elections or people complaining about the outcomes. But some of these states and that are going to determine not only sort of the makeup of Congress, but, I don't think people realize how powerful governors become if you have, predominantly Republican or predominantly Democratic governors throughout the United States. So all of these races are so, so important. And it really, you can't stress enough the importance of people coming out and voting,
And certainly now with the prolonged voting period, like you said back in the introduction, you really do not have an excuse saying I wasn't able to go out that specific day. Well, there's no specific day anymore.
Right. Again, Connecticut's one of four states that doesn't have early voting. But there really is no excuse for not voting between absentee ballots and early voting. By law, most states require that employers give you time off to vote. So I just think that it's easy to blame candidates and things like that. It's easy to say, you have these bad candidates. But the reality is the American public and the American electorate has to take some responsibility, and they have to go out and vote. So, I think we can't really keep complaining about the situation and not actually go out and do something about it.
She is practitioner in residence for legal studies and political science at the University of New Haven at newhaven.edu. Learn more about the educational opportunities. The offer, Trish Krause, thank you so much for your insight today.
Thank you.